Okay, this is a special edition of Curious Questions with Ricky Williams. March 20th this year is International Astrology Day, and it's not always on the 20th. Sometimes it's as early as the 19th or as late as the 22nd, because it's always on the spring equinox, the first day of spring. And this day is important to astrologers because for us, you know, the chart, everything really starts with Aries, which is 0 degrees Aries, or it's the first day of spring. So my guests on this show are a pair of astrologers who I know personally because they are partners on my app I'm working on, my relationship app, Leela. And I also know them professionally because they are really badass astrologers. So, and, you know, and they're business women. And I think that's what, as I got to know them and work with them, they're dynamic creators. They've built a business with astrology, 7 figures, extremely impressive. And I can't wait to, you know, to introduce you guys to them and get to talk to them a little bit. Astrology wise, they're twins, so they have pretty much the same chart. Interesting point here. I'm also a twin. And so the astro twins, they are Sagittarians. And so we'll definitely get into their philosophy on life, and I'll ask them about their travels. And also Sagittarius is a lot about the development of faith. And so I'm sure in their road to success, you know, they've had to really believe in themselves. And so hopefully we'll get some stories around that. Interesting part is they have Scorpio moons. Okay. And Scorpio is about the things that tend to make most people uncomfortable. You know, I think of Scorpio for most people, not for everyone, because Scorpio is people that have this, you know, strong Pluto, strong eighth house placements. You know, they're all going to have this interest in the things that most people tend to hide. And so it's the things that are taboo, you know? So Scorpios notice, you know, what lurks beneath the surface, you know, the things that are underneath. And so, you know, sex, right? Things that we typically are not supposed to talk about in public. You know, I also think of Scorpio for a lot of people are those things that we need to hear, we need to look at, we need to pay attention to, but it's so uncomfortable that a lot of times it's easy to avoid. So hopefully they have some seedy, sexy, dark secrets to reveal. And they have a Capricorn rising, Capricorn ascendant. And again, I talked about them creating businesses. And so, you know, Capricorn has a lot to do with the great work, making something real. And so often it's associated with business. And typically people with strong Capricorn in their charts have a strong work ethic. So it'll be interesting to see. So let's check them out. All right. So without further ado, my guest for this session of Curious Questions with me, Ricky Williams, are the Astro Twins, Ophi and Tali. So just so everyone knows, Ophi, do you want to raise your hand and let everyone, okay? And Tali?
Hey. Hey.
Okay. And so the way this thing goes is I've already recorded an intro where I talk about, you know, how I know you guys and talk a little bit about your chart and what I'm interested to learn about, to ask you about. And this session is special for me because, you know, for the most part, I've had, you know, football guys, sports guys, and cannabis people. And most of them know very little, if anything, about astrology. And so it's been interesting. And I feel like I have to be careful to not start nerding out on astrology with you guys. So welcome. And let's get started. So I'm going to start with my favorite question is, so the 10th house tradition, one of the traditional names for the 10th house is the house of reputation. Okay. And so I'm looking at the chart of the 10th house and I see Mars conjunct Venus in Scorpio conjunct the moon in the 10th house. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I know you guys went to the University of Michigan. Go Tom Brady. Yeah. And so I'm guessing that the twins had a reputation at the University of Michigan.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
And let us tell you about that reputation. No,
actually, we had sort of an interesting split screen reputation. Because one of the big things we did while we were at the University of Michigan was publish a multicultural, size positive, body positive lifestyle. Everyone who basically wasn't invited to be part of mainstream media. We published a women's magazine that kind of took that format and put, you know, normalized. That was sort of the thinking behind it. It's like, yeah, you're going to open up this magazine and read articles about intersectionality, which wasn't even a word then.
This was in the early 90s, yeah, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. But so we would, one of the things that, like, you know, our crew that we worked on that with, we all bonded over astrology. So we all got obsessed with it together. And we'd be out, of course, at parties, and some that we did throw like the only and best hip hop parties at the University of Michigan. Yes, very proud of that legacy. But yeah, we would just wind up guessing people's signs, their rise. I mean, it was just always an obsessive topic, as I'm sure, you know, it is for you. I mean, Mars, Venus, Moon, the personal planets up there. It's like, you know, when you're out and about, you just have to, you have to ask that thing you're obsessed with.
You can't be in the same room with someone after a certain amount of time without wanting to know. So yeah, we developed a reputation with our magazine for inclusivity and as astrologers. So mm-hmm. That laid the foundation for, what is it, almost 30 years later. Scary.
So yeah, what did that look like as astrologers in the early 90s? Because, you know, now astrology has gained so much popularity, but in the early 90s, especially for, you know, 20-year-olds, what was that like?
Right. There were no apps. It started like in bookstores. I don't know if you did that too, Ricky, if you prowled around the bookstores reading astrology books too. But my college boyfriend got me my chart done as a gift, and it had, you know, it was sent away for, came back as this bound 30-page booklet,
which I stole from her immediately to read.
Yeah. Because I didn't really even know much. Right. It was hers too. We were like 21. I was like, so we didn't have apps or anything like that, but we were both computer nerds. So I did soon after that get a little piece of software where I could plug it. It was called Cosmic Portrait.
Oh,
we could plug in our friends' time, date, and place of birth and like pump out what at least the placements of their chart were. And then we'd open one of those books and read the interpretation and started to just memorize it as we went. And so we learned it, you know, step by step.
Let's co-star. Let's go back a couple of steps, because and we all have our like how we found astrology story, but there's like a gap when once you experience astrology or you see what it is, there has to be something that it wakes up in you or that it activates to motivate the effort to go to the bookstore and to study something that a lot of people kind of look at you like you're crazy when you try to talk to them about it.
Well, we were talking to a friend of ours who actually worked on Hughes, our magazine, with us. And we're like, oh, what sign are you? I don't know. It's just she said, oh, my birthday's coming up. Or we're like, oh, you're a Libra, like our sister. She's like, I'm a Libra with an Aries moon and a Cancer rising. We're like, what does that mean? And then she started explaining it. And we were like, oh, wow, well, we want to find out what ours are. And I think we stopped by a Borders, which is no more, the Ann Arbor Borders books, and went and bought a book on moon signs there. And
that's true.
Actually, we had like Sidney Omar's books and these annual guides. And we thought we were an Aquarius rising because it didn't do the time zone. And I thought it was so cool, like rebellious. And then like found out. You have Capricorn rising. That was hard to take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, funny story. You know, my wife Linnea is a Capricorn rising, and right. her mother in her baby book wrote 12:58 a.m. for her birth time. Ooh. And so we thought she was a Sag rising, you know, and you know, I was like, wow, this is great. You know, within a couple of months of dating, I invited her to fly to meet me in Copenhagen, and she did. So I was like, this is great. We get her birth certificate and she's born at 2:51. And so Capricorn rising. And it took about a week and a half, you know, for her to like come to terms with it.
Cosmic trauma. Yeah.
Well, you know,
the
rising sign is your outward, you know, your front facing personality, you know, no offense to Capricorns. Actually, we've developed quite a love for that sign over the years, but like, what, you know, Capricorn rising does make you a bit more reserved and serious, and you take everything like, it's like, sometimes I feel like I can make like fun into work, you know, whereas Sag rising is more of the adventurer, and Aquarius rising, and you know, who doesn't want to be that, those things, but you get what you get, you know, and it's funny you mentioned the moon, Mars and Venus up in Scorpio, because that is really for me, and I'm probably for Ophi too, I think what just made our heads explode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, please.
Because we had read we were Sagittarius, and we're like, oh yeah, that's true. Sagittarius rules publishing, and we publish a magazine, and it rules travel, and we loved it. So we just identified with the sun sign or our zodiac sign. We didn't know there was anything even beyond that. And then when we got this chart, we found we had Moon, Mercury, Mars, and Venus in Scorpio, which is so different. You know, Sag is all outgoing and everybody's like BFF, but then there's this deep, intense, like Scorpio thing, and it explained this whole other part of us. Like, we would go do puzzles, like 5,000 piece puzzles for hours, or just like psychoanalyze our relatives before we were had even hit puberty, and they'd be like, you're so wise.
I know our aunt used to come to us for like relationship advice. We're like seven. I'm like, how do I know what to tell her? I have no idea.
Right.
But it explains so much. Yeah.
Yeah. So this idea of it explains so much, you know, I think this is a common sentiment among people as they start to dive into, especially as they get off just the sun sign and they get into the moon rising, that it's, you know, so, you know, my similar story is when I started learning astrology, I learned Vedic astrology first.
Oh, you
did? I learned from a Hindu Swami. I was working with it, and I studied, and I traveled in India, and it was great, but you know, I was still working with it. And then I found a Vedic astrologer, this guy named Ernst Wilhelm, and he uses the tropical zodiac. He uses Vedic rules, but he uses the tropic zodiac. So I really liked his stuff. And so I just experimented one time, and I switched the zodiac. And it just started to sing.
Gemini.
It started to sing, and I never went back. And at this time, you know, by this time, I had already started to take craniosacral courses. And I remember the first time I took a craniosacral course, I put my hand on someone's head to feel their rhythm, and I felt like my heart just opened like this. Wow. And somehow I felt like I've done this before. It just felt so natural. Yeah, and then when I looked at my Cancer moon, you know, and I started to understand that it made so much sense.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Right.
You
know, and that as was a football how we player, felt too.
And as a football player, right. I was so sensitive, you know, and people would say, why are, you know, they'd make fun of me for being right. sensitive, even though on the outside I was, you know, so it helped a lot of things, you know, make sense.
Do you wish you would have known about your Cancer moon earlier? That would have probably given you a lot. I mean, I wish I knew about my Scorpio moon earlier. I think I would have been a lot kinder to myself, understanding that water moon.
I think I would have been more supportive. You know, I would have felt more supported. Like, for instance, when I went to college, I said I wanted to become an elementary school teacher, you know? But it wasn't supported, but, you know, but if I knew I had a Cancer moon, I might have gone in that direction. I would have felt more supported moving that.
Yeah, or at least totally. Like known. One of the things, the chart that Ophi's boyfriend printed out, it was saying when you have Venus and Scorpio, like you literally cannot be in a room without like, that's like the wrong lighting and color without being visibly disturbed. And I think I had like painted our apartment at least 7 different times to get the perfect hue.
Yeah.
I was like, always like, was like, no, it's like off by a shade, you know, like now I'm like really great at picking out paint colors for people. And, but like, yeah, that obsessive design, like part of our brains, you know, having the Scorpio planets up in the 10th house, which rules career, sort of a waste of some good Scorpios.
You gotta sneak your way to the top, people. Okay, so I'm just gonna, we've already slept our way to the top through all our past lives or something. But I felt like when I got this chart, someone had handed me the instruction manual to myself that I didn't know I came with. And it was like, oh my God, I got the code. I got like, I didn't, you know, it just opened up all these blind spots. And all of a sudden I could see parts of myself that I just, you know, you struggle because you can't, as that saying goes, you can't see your own eyeballs. So we keep hitting our head against the same wall and people are like, you're so like this. Why are you like this? And you're like, I'm not, I don't know what I'm doing. And it becomes personal. You start to feel like you have a character flaw. And when you get your chart, I feel like, and it's presented in a way that makes sense, either by a good explanation or a good reader, it's like, oh, it's not personal. I am designed this way for a reason. I have all these different parts. They don't fit together perfectly. They seem mismatched, but it's the perfect, it's a perfect roadmap for what I need to learn. That's how I have come to see it. So.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've come to see it in a very similar light. And I feel like, you know, the part of me that loves the adventure feels like life is the adventure of taking this, you know, sometimes disparate parts and finding a way for them to all play in harmony together. And
right. It's like, you know, conducting an orchestra inside your head or something, you know?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, something you said, Tali, and you too, Ophi, just mentioned it. It's this idea of sometimes, you know, when we're judging ourselves based on other people's opinion of us, you know, a lot of the times we land on there's something wrong with us. Mm-hmm. But for me, when I look at my chart, I can appreciate those things about myself.
You know? Right. I was just thinking about how people are resistant to astrology because they're kind of afraid they're going to find out something terrible and scary about themselves. A lot of like, right. That's, I mean, because there are people out there who should not be allowed to practice the mystical arts, who like use fear tactics or say things like, oh, I don't see marriage in your chart, or, you know, and our approach to astrology, and I'm sure yours is this way too, is just like anyone, we're co-creating with the universe at any time. You can, you know, it's just knowing your factory settings. That's like knowing that, you know, for us, like, okay, I'm a Sagittarius. I'm going to be energetic and excitable and, you know, big picture person, but I'm also wired to really make sure I focus on the details. And like our South Node, our past life energy is in Cancer. It's like, it's really hard for me to leave the house sometimes. Like I need people to drag me out. I can just sit at my computer all day. Like understanding that, you know, that part of myself, it's like I can do workarounds. You can life hack your world with knowing these proclivities that you have, but you're not stuck with this destiny. That's what I love about astrology too. It's like, okay, it's like understanding. It's like, have you ever done any family systems therapy at all, Ricky? Or do you know
about?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
Isn't it like the astrology of therapy? That's how I feel. Yeah,
it is. I mean, it does sometimes feel like the planets are like a family. And it's, yeah, they are. So I would like you to talk more about what you're just speaking about. Because I think sometimes when people look at astrology, they use it as an excuse. And, mm-hmm. you know, of this is why I am how I am, instead of a tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like you, we love the work of Stephen Forrest, evolutionary astrology, and the idea that your soul has lived many lifetimes and it comes into a body to meet a certain set of challenges and or designed for your growth. That's what I've come to believe after looking at thousands of charts, that there are no accidents, even though there are
charts that look like car accidents a little bit every now and then, mm-hmm. but not. It's all your, you always have a choice what you're going to do with any challenge that you get. If you have consciousness, I'll try to make it simpler. I believe more in free will, the more about astrology I've learned. There are many people who treat astrology as deterministic. Well, you've got a Scorpio moon, so you're going to be intense. Well, okay. But once I understand that that's how I may be wired, I can choose. Oh, look, I'm getting intense. I do know this about myself. Now I have control of the dials. So I'm going to be responsible for that and manage myself, apply free will, ask myself, does it serve the situation for me to be Scorpio intense or not? It's like once you know that 2 + 2 = 4, you can't not turn your math homework in anymore, you know?
But, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll admit that I do use my chart as an excuse, you know, and then I catch myself doing it, you know, it's like, you know, I can get kind of, you know, I have my moments of jealousy and possessiveness with the Scorpio moon, especially in relationships. And, you know, like earlier in life, like, I just noticed a lot of tendencies with the Scorpio, Mars, Venus, and Moon to want to be like really guarded in relationships and ask, you know, I would just ask a lot of questions about the other person and never really realize I wasn't sharing myself. I thought I was being like super close and intimate, but they knew nothing about me. And I was like an investigative journalistic expert on them. And like, it was like, you know, well, I have a Scorpio, you know, I caught myself saying that, like, well, I have a Scorpio moon, so I take longer to open up. And then I was like, that's bullshit, Tali, you know, like, use this as a challenge point, you know, to say, what would happen? Like, Scorpio can also have that deep soulful bonding. And I actually realized that I started dating a different type of man at that point, because it was like, I realized that I was kind of hiding out behind the moon and just kind of having these superficial connections. Hey, you know, meeting someone at karaoke can, you know, when the oxytocin is flowing from group singing, you know,
yeah,
what can you do? You know,
anything else, anything can happen.
Right. Yeah. Sag.
Right. And there's that, right? I know.
Why leave the bar?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Always down for an adventure. I love it.
Uh-huh.
I have a ninth house sun, so I get it.
So you understand.
Yeah,
totally. I get it.
So yeah. So it's about understanding that, yes, we are Sages. We're going to love certain things, but there's a time and a place, right?
You know, I would say, I don't think it's making an excuse or using it that way sometimes, but sometimes it's helpful to explain to another person, especially when you're getting into a relationship, who they're getting into a relationship with.
You know? Yeah.
And so for me, you know, and this might sound, and I was sitting in a class, one of Stephen Forrest's class, and it was the synastry class. And he said something and it hit me in the head. And I was like, I never thought about it that way. But just this idea, when we commit to another person in a relationship, right, that we're giving up like all these other potential choices. I guess this was the first time I was willing to commit in a relationship, but we're giving up all these other choices. And so to consider, if I'm giving up all these choices, then this person has to bring something that I feel that it's worth it, that I feel good about giving, you know? And it was like, duh. but that, you know, I was 40 years old. It's my 40th birthday. It was 40 years old before I realized, you know, that relationship is about like two equals. And part of that is not making an excuse for who I am, but letting someone know who I am. You know, I'm a Gemini and I like to talk and I have a lot of different interests. And if that doesn't work for you, like, that's fine. But, you know, that's what you're going to get. You know, that's who I am. And again, not using it like going into the shadow, but just saying like these are, because, you know, I think of especially the sun sign, right? It's what gives us vitality. And if you're not taking care of your son, what are you doing?
Oh, and exactly.
So, entering into a relationship, letting someone know who you are. So in best case scenario, they can support your shine.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of how you can express that sun. So I guess what we're kind of saying is you know, you are a Gemini or you are a Sagittarius or whatever, but you can be a high vibe or a low vibe version of that. You can be an awake or an asleep version of that. And the more you learn about it, the more consciousness you can bring. And then you can be the best version of a Gemini. You can be a Gemini who can have commitment, but also playfulness and duality and choice and experience commitment as a choice instead of a trap, right?
Yes, so. Exactly. Yeah, that's, and again, took me 40 years to trip into that to that awareness.
Yeah, or negotiate right. what commitment is for you and what it looks like. And know that you may also have that duality where you're like, I hate commitment, but I'm choosing it anyways, you know,
yes.
and like,
yeah.
be okay
so you can
with
remind
that.
You can remind yourself when you're having those hard days that, oh yeah, I didn't want it, but I still chose it. Right. That's
right.
And you and Linnea both have a North Node in Libra. So you were actually, and the North Node is what you came here to learn. Libra is a sign of committed relationships. So, you know, of course you were 40 by the time you really were ready for that. You know, what I love about astrology is it takes the shame and should off of us. Like, because we walk around like, well, everyone else has that figured out, right? Why don't I? And it's like, no, you have your path that you're supposed to learn.
This reminds me, I was having a similar conversation to this with Linnea about, she said something similar about, you know, as she, so she's 6 months pregnant now, and is she was wrestling with, you know, getting pregnant, she's like, why does it seem so easy for everyone else, you know? And then in her chart, she's got the moon square in the South Node.
You know? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I found that people with the moon in Capricorn, because the moon is the mother and then Capricorn is the father. So I've seen so many women with moon in Capricorn have fertility issues because, you know, it's like you're, brain is red. Your astrological brain is registering that you're not a woman in some way, and you're biologically or something. It's very, I've seen this over and over again. It's like almost like, okay, you were born with a Capricorn moon. I know that sounded a little controversial, but maybe you were supposed to wrestle with the choice of expressing maternal energy through a child versus through nurturing people in an office or in your career or through work. So there's sort of an adjustment phase you have to go through.
And part of that narrative also is what's showing up in our life is also, you know, Capricorn tends to rule more mature. So a more mature, mature mother, you know, and if you think of in this the story you're telling, someone early in life learns nurturing this way through in an office and they're, you know, as they get into, you know, moving close to their Uranian opposition.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's an opportunity to switch and do something different.
Yeah. Are you in your Uranian opposition right now? Oh, boy. Good time to start a podcast.
Let's talk about this.
And it's on top of my Mercury, because my Mercury opposes my natal Uranus. So
start
an astrology podcast. Yeah.
Of course. That was early 40s are such interesting times. So Uranus, or, you know, if people don't know because they're not astro geeks like this, travels halfway around its 84-year orbit. And then Saturn is usually opposite where in the zodiac wheel in the sky where it was when you were born. Neptune's at this 90 degree angle called a square. So you're really dealing with like boundaries, adulthood versus freedom and responsibility. And it's like, these are like a pack of midlife crisis planets, you know?
The Pluto square at 38 or so. There's like the outer planets, as they're called, that move more slowly. Yeah, come at around 38 to 42 into like sort of a cosmic traffic jam where it's like someone slams on the brakes in your life and just like blasts you with this new energy. That's what it kind
of
feels like.
But I love the Neptune square that happens around 40 when Neptune is this dreamy, flowy planet that has like, it's very boundless. It's very like undefined. And then it's like almost like this T-boning, if you could put them together in a picture. It's just like, I find like that's an age like around 39, 40 where people are like, really learn how to say no powerfully, because you realize
Kardashian is in it, right?
Oh, is she? Right. She just turned 40. So there's just this time where you have to like set those boundaries and figure out. It can be a little messy. Like, I think people can sometimes go on a ghosting and unfriending spree. That's a little much, but it's like learning where that, and then like along comes this Uranus opposition that you're in, and it's like, ah.
Yeah, it's you know, and this I think this conversation really shows something else that astrology can offer is understanding of what's going on in time, right? You know,
right,
in these cycles, and you know, we see it because we talk to people about their charts. It's like clockwork, you know. Saturn return, you know, the Uranus opposition, that people, this is when they reach out because they have questions about what's going on. And like that feeling they get when you say, when we laugh, you know, this is normal, you know, people at this stage with this planet, you know, interacting here, this is normal what you're experiencing.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Saturn return, which is when, you know, that happens around 28, 29 to 30 when Saturn does 56. One full orbit, but the first one is like that one full orbit around the sun and returns to where it was when you were born. That was when we started our career as professional astrologers. We have Saturn in Gemini, the sign of the writer, twins. It was like we started working together. We got our first job writing for Teen People magazine. They wanted his and hers daily, 7 days a week. And it was like, oh my God. But I mean, of course we said yes to the job because, you know, like we're obsessed with this is where those obsessive Scorpio planets in the 10th house come in handy. But it was just like spent the entire summer, like just writing and learning. And we were like, I think that's how we've been. People are like, you write so fast. We're like, oh my God, you have no idea how we started in the
10,000 hours.
Yeah, how we started this out. Like, you know, I don't even know how we ever wrote all that.
So do you guys consider your Saturn in the sixth house or the fifth house?
Fifth house. Fifth. I mean, it's right on the cusp there, yeah. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Stephen talks about, you know, looking at the Saturn return and looking at the house of the natal Saturn and really looking at this is where, you know, people are taking their stand. And kind of the way I think about it, you know, and not that like it's good or bad, but there's a way to respond well to Saturn, and there's a way to respond well to all the planets, you know, and sometimes it takes some of us longer to figure it out. So my Saturn return, I think I felt another drug test.
And, oh, wow.
And I went to play football in Toronto. And there is where I found out that I was a healer. I found craniosacral therapy and my whole life started to shift and move.
Wow.
And move in a different direction. Because I was trying to hold, you know, I think making a poor response to Saturn was holding on to this idea of what my role in the community should be based on. Fact that I was a football player, not really listening to something deeper inside.
And do you have Saturn in Leo? Or?
Saturn in Leo in the 11th, yeah.
Oh, in the 11th, of course.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Right. You've got Saturn in the 11th. We have Sun and Neptune. So let's, I want to know, you know, I know it's your show.
No, please. But I have a go for it.
Scorpio moon.
Please.
How do you, I mean, you're a Gemini, so, you know, you were born to be comfortable with contradiction within yourself or whatever, or pieces that don't fit perfectly together. But, you know, how have you come to reconcile being a NFL and astrology? And I'll tell you quickly, like before we started astrology, you know, I was recruited by Gloria Steinem because of our magazine. When she bought back Ms., the original feminist magazine, she wanted, this was in 1998, I think she wanted to have like, at the time, a young Gen X feminist person come and help reinvent the magazine. So that's how I ended up in New York and trying to reconcile working for, you know, Gloria Steinem, the queen of, you know, feminism and being an astrologer. I ended up leaving for astrology and having to tell her. She was very nice about it. She was like, well, I had my chart done in India in the 60s, but I wish astrology wasn't so genderized. I was like, yeah, if I could just read your chart, you would know you were such an Aries, but I had to let it go. But it's been like, yeah, that is not the world where astrology lives because it's about the opposite of determinism and women can be anything.
Well, it
they
does
want.
Now with like millennial and Gen Z women. They're all, they all have... They all call themselves feminists and all have you know, an astrology app. Or
I was
going to
say now
phone,
it's like that. Now they're yeah. like they're the same thing now.
You yeah, know, they
I
guess are.
Just,
yeah,
now they are, but they yeah. so were not. I didn't even know if I was comfortable with the label at the time because of what it meant. But I, you know, I was like, great, a job in New York City, awesome, I'll go. You know.
Yeah,
right.
Sag,
things yeah. we do.
Screw it. Let me just pack up and reinvent my life. But yeah, but so I know from that time what it's like to have like two identities that don't mesh together like peanut butter and jelly or whatever. So what? How are you reconciling that in your
yeah,
life?
So
or do you even bother?
I don't bother. You know, it's interesting how it all kind of unfolded for me. So what one of the things I'm really starting to appreciate is this idea of nature versus nurture, you know? And I think we can think mm-hmm. I can look and I think you guys will agree, you can look at a chart and get a good sense of someone's nature. You know, I think that's one of the things yeah. that the chart is indicating. Nurture you can get a little bit, but really nurture is like the times we live in, you know, the experience, the family, the culture we land in. And so like the chart is trying to express itself in a culture, in an environment. And so growing up as an African-American, like, you know, Virgo rising in a ninth house Gemini, I was curious and I took pride in like being smart. But if you're in my neighborhood, if you're African-American and you're smart, you get beat up. And so that part of myself, I kind of had to like, you know, kind of put the kibosh on. I got some expression of it because I grew up, I was a preacher's kid. And so I was in church and hearing the stories and really fed my ninth house Gemini, you know, but in that kind of yeah. transferred more into sports. And I kind of lost that kind of intellectual part and I went all in sports. And so, you know, my lunar return, you know, I have that 10th house moon, my lunar return. I was a football player and I started to think like, what am I really doing? You know, I thought back to when I was a kid and like, I wanted to make a difference. And I felt like most of what I was doing was just distracting people for a couple of hours on Sundays. And so it led to me, you know, letting go of that and then starting to explore. And it was like, almost as soon as I retired from football, it was like, I became really smart like that, like all of a sudden, you know, like I gave myself permission to start to take on another identity. And then it became, so I had a year off after I retired and I traveled and read the whole year. That's all I did. I sat in a tent in yeah. Australia reading books. So I just, and so when I came back to the NFL, then I really had these two different parts of myself. And each year they got like closer, closer, closer. And then when I retired for the second time, I really got a chance to integrate them and to move in a direction that allows me to do so. And so, you know, astrology, you know, starting to become a professional astrologer and do readings and working on Leela, which we're working on together. It's really giving me like a way to express myself in a meaningful way. And it feels like the coming together of all the different parts.
I wonder if just like the like feminism and astrology are like sort of converging. Do you think that'll happen with athletes? Because I feel like to be an athlete, you have to use that intuitive part of your brain, like the way a chart will kind of.
Patterns.
I mean, I'm not an athlete at all, but I know I'm like when I get in the do anything.
So this is an interesting question that you know really my relationship with you two has really kind of got me thinking about is, you know, your brand Astro Style, like you guys are kicking ass and really nice. You guys are like nailing like a crowd, you know? And there's this other like man crowd, right? And most men,
yeah, someone
when
talk
I talk
about
to them about astrology, it's like they roll their eyes and then, you know,
yeah.
and I think part of why I've started this podcast is to start to have these, to allow men to listen to these kinds of conversations. Because to me, you know, the analogy that I think of a astrological chart. So in football, right? If we're playing the Steelers, okay, on mm-hmm. Wednesday we come into work and we get this booklet and it's a scouting report, right? So we know on first down the Steelers bring this blitz, you know, 20% of the time, and on second down they play this coverage 80%. So basically, when we go into a game, yeah. we have a good idea of what they're going to be doing, and we just have to be creative in how we prepare for it. And so in a coach wouldn't dare think about going into a game without a scouting report. You know, wouldn't dare think about it. And so, you know, just finding ways to talk about astrology to help unlock the taboo and the stigma around it, to see that right. It's, you know, that it's extremely useful and helpful, but it's really cool because it allows you to make sense of things, right?
Oh my God. Well,
exactly. It's like, for the cisgender man, I guess it's like, don't they like instructions? So like, why would you not want instructions? You know, it's just so, I guess Gloria Steinem was right. Astrology is genderized and it is sort of seen as this sort of women's magazine, like fluff crap to fill the last page of the book or whatever, instead of a serious scouting report or playbook or patterns. I mean, if you look at the Age of Enlightenment and, you know, Benjamin Banneker and Benjamin Franklin, and they all had almanacs. That was the thing to do. And they all the almanacs had an ephemeris in it, which was a daily map of where the known planets would be. And I think Ben Franklin published his for like 50 years or something like that, maybe less, but people paid money to have those year in it. They didn't go without having the almanac for the year. And this was men that, you know, a lot of the guys that would roll their eyes at astrology today respect and look up to as icons. So I think a lot of people don't even know the history of people who were astrologers. Galileo had to renounce his belief in it to save his own life. Like when you actually start to look at that, it's just, it's fascinating.
And in addition to that amazing history, like what's so cool about astrology is it's actually a system, like a scouting report that you can look at, like at the chart. Like when I wouldn't dare go into an astrology reading without looking at the chart. But once I get on the field with it, there's not enough time to be, you know, like you're in conversation, you're in communication with the other players you're doing a reading for. And you like have to open up those like intuitive channels that don't even have time to think. You got your map, but you're also in the moment and bringing things in. And it's like, it seems like it would be a compatible
That's what
skill.
Football, that's what,
that's
I mean,
what
I think,
was going to say.
I think that's what's allowed me to be able to do this is because I have that of, you know, study. But once you're on the field, you just gotta go with it.
Yeah. Right, like sports, right. Like astrology is a combination of like, there's a map with astrology. Anyone can learn it, but really good astrologers, just like really good athletes, are not sitting there in the stands, you know, armchair quarterbacking. They're like on the field in the game, like taking that map and combining it with like that intuition.
Okay, this is combining it with intuition, but I also want to say combining it with the set of information and knowledge and skills that we've developed in other areas of our life.
Right.
And this is what impresses me the most about you two is, you know, for me, I'm constantly thinking of how can I take this information and make it useful and practical for people.
Yeah.
And you guys, I think you guys have really mastered that art. And
thank
so,
you
know, you. And I think if we're having this conversation about men, and I'm thinking about business. So can you guys talk about how, just some musings about how astrology can be used to support people, entrepreneurs or people, you know, running businesses?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, one of the things, especially for entrepreneurs, you either have a lack of time, money, or both. Because unless, you know, your rich daddy or mommy or venture capitalists poured a bucket of money on you, and even if they did, you still have to, you know, the clock is still ticking. You still have a lot of decisions you have to make. And the average person I saw somewhere makes 38,000 decisions a day, the average adult. And that's overwhelming. And when, you know, if you're like, I want to start this business, but I can't quit my 9-to-5 until I reach a certain threshold, you're going to be really like kind of holding on tight. And a lot of people get stuck in that sort of analysis paralysis, and they don't move forward, or their business moves at a snail's pace because they don't have the right decision-making metrics. So for us, I've been really thinking about this. I think it's a combination of hard skills, and I don't know if I would consider astrology a hard skill at this point. I'd consider it a soft skill, but a very valuable one. But when you can combine those two, like, what do I know? Oh, I know graphic design. I know how to write. I know how to edit. I know how to, you know, sell. I know how to be charismatic. I know how to do whatever it is. And you know this other, astrology gives you the art of timing, so you can time your decisions. It also helps you understand what to do and what not to do. You know, I've shared with you some of the tools we've created over the years, Ricky. Like, we've found a way to make your chart into something that you can, you don't have to learn all the hieroglyphics or become an astrologer, but you can use it to go, oh, I should put my energy into social media, or I should actually create a 20-hour certification course and go do the public speaking circuit, or I should be an influencer and try to team up with brands. Like, once you know what you're best suited for, it's very validating, then you can move forward. And you need, in a business, you need momentum, right? So it really does help.
And sometimes, you know, there's the book, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. He says, we all have a zone of genius, a zone of excellence, and then it kind of goes down from there. I think people wind up working in their zone of excellence a lot of times because it's like they can make money. They can do really well with it. Astrology will reveal your zone of genius now, and as well as your zone of excellence. But you want to be, sometimes we put the energy into things like we wouldn't necessarily cultivate like the zone of genius. In our world, an example, you know, we have a Capricorn North Node, our destiny point in Capricorn rising. Well, as Ophi told you, and I told you too, we were doing all these women's magazines, and we still have a strong relationship with women's media and publishing. But when we, Capricorn is associated with men, you know, I mean, in the classic genderizing of astrology, you know, but like we do really thrive when we work with men. It would have been so easy for us to just kind of get lost in women's media. But like we love working with you and Steven, for example. It's like there's something really nice that and magical that happens when we're working with men as well. And so like knowing that, like, has sometimes we probably would have not made certain decisions, but like some of our most lucrative business decisions, as well as our most fulfilling ones, have come because of leaning into that Capricorn, you know, vibe there. So go, you know, and knowing that was super helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of this project, Leela, that, you know, we're talking about, Stephen Forrest and twins and myself, wife Linnea, yeah, and our COO, Matt, is really, this is what it was about for me, is taking this information and turning it into something practical that people can use. And, you know, where I've had a lot of experience is in relationships. And, you know, as learning astrology and practicing it, you know, going through a divorce and then meeting Linnea and then getting married again, and really like using astrology to really track like what was going on. And yeah, I learned so much. And so taking this information and creating something that people can actually use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing about, and I chose relationships, one, because I have a lot of experience, but two, because we experience life through our relationships. You know, not only our intimate relationships, but with our siblings, our parents, you know, that's how life reaches us, right? Through the people that we care about. And so to me, it's, you know, astrology and a partner, it's dynamic. And I can speak to that. You know, my wife Linnea has really gotten into astrology, and I know that you two can speak to that. As you guys
we were
learned,
born married as twins, you know?
Yes.
Well, you know, that like men who get into astrology are pretty smart, you know, like you will have like instant icebreaker with almost any woman. I mean, that's like, for one thing, you know, if you're straight and everything, but you know, like it's also, it's like the ultimate, it's such a great tool. Like we all as humans want to have great relationships with people, maybe not romantically at every phase of life, but like, you know, relationship building, it's like whether you're on a team or you're, you know, doing business, like, oh my God, it is the ultimate tool. One of the funniest things that happened, we do these astro audits where Ophi was saying we kind of look at people's charts without the hieroglyphics, and we kind of come up with, you know, like, are you mostly fire, earth, like we call it Astro Ayurveda. We kind of look at the elements. And one of our clients was actually a, like she was all fire practically. And she and her husband had a, they lived in Hollywood and they had a chili pepper farm. And they had, they started a hot sauce company. It was like just on the side, you know, it was so funny. So,
but we did a whole audit of all of their branding and everything based on her chart. And she made all these changes to her website and the packaging and some of the colors. Cause we have a, we went to the University of Michigan for art and design. So we have a background in branding and web design and everything too. So we're able to bring those skills in addition to our publishing. So they ended up like really taking the changes on, and they end up selling the farm and the business after this audit. We had another person who got a patent for her design. She didn't really know what to do with it. She came up with this thing that would prevent off the shoulder tops for women from riding up when you go like this or pick up your drink. It's so like, who thinks of that? But oh God, that is so true. That and so we did a whole audit of her chart and her business together. And that that led to her getting a patent and some contracts and that kind of thing. So it's so it's such a shortcut. It's such a hack. Like we're not into astrology for astrology's sake. It's just the best tool for not wasting your damn time on a million mistakes. Like life is short. I want to get some shit done. I want to make some things in the world. I don't have time to do just maybe Thomas Edison made 10,000 mistakes, but nobody has that kind of time in 2021, you know, to get to their light bulb.
Well, see, right? this is a great example of the versatility, of astrology is the way I think of it is a perspective, or sometimes I think of it as a language. And so, whereas as you know, Capricorn rising here, you know, you guys are dynamic, you know, business people, and like, you know, time. You know, for me, this ninth house, Gemini, it's like, I love astrology because it helps me connect the dots, you know, it helps me, you know, it helps me know what to call things, right? And see how they, and see how they're all related. And
that's true.
And there's something about, you know, I'm a big proponent of everyone getting like a basic education in this. In this language, because the world is becoming so chaotic, we're gonna need a way to understand what's going on, and I think there's something and part of the vision behind Lila is there's something about when you're looking at a chart or reading a book by yourself, you know, and you're kind of thinking about it yourself, and there's something magical when you're sharing these insights or even reading this, or someone is reading it to you, and there's another person that, you know, it's like. You know, like Stephen calls it, you know, it's like asking the rat to guard the cheese. You know, when you're looking at your own stuff, it's hard to see. It's hard to see. But when you have that other person to share, it becomes very dynamic and things unfold. I didn't realize this, you know, in my first marriage, you know, she's great, but she didn't have much interest in astrology. And then I got with Linnea and she started to take an interest in astrology, and it became something that we could use to understand each other, to understand what was going on. And it was like, we had a basis with which we could communicate. And it's made even like,
it is a language.
It's made even the most difficult time so much easier. You know, I remember when we were going through our first fight, you know, how, you know, when you first start dating someone and everything is great and then it gets serious, then you have that first bump in the road.
And you're like, no.
And it was
the
like
honeymoon is over.
It was like everything we said to each other, somehow it would turn into, like, even if we were like, okay, we're not gonna get, it would somehow turn into some kind of like tussle. And I remember like I was on the phone and like I pulled over to the side of the road and I looked pulled out my phone and I said, like, what's going on? And I looked and I just saw Mars, 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 Mars. And I just took a deep breath and I was like, got it, you know? And I felt like, okay, I can work with this. You know, there's some stuff that needs to get out into the open. I can be more conscious about it. So it's not just cooking under the surface and we're poking at each other.
My God. Exactly. And then you can just like, that's when it is a good moment to use the planets as a reason, not an excuse, but a reason. They do. I mean, it's like we are in the flow. We are part of this whole system and we are affected by it. And you know, we went into this with skepticism, but over and over, we just obsessively studied over the years and saw the cycles. And as I'm sure you have too, Ricky, you know, you just start to see these things happening. And it's like, that's what any scientist does. You study data and then you draw a hypothesis based on, it's not just out of nowhere, you know, like this has been around since, you know, the Babylonians and earlier, you know, like people have been like tracking the connection between human beings and the cosmos since ancient times. So, you know, we have some data.
For me, it was just like, I got the chart. I was like, what the hell? How does this 30-page thing know all this about me? This cannot be denied, but what the hell just happened? I just gave you my time, date, and place of birth. And why does this document know this? And just too much Scorpio in my chart to just let it go. I was like, I got to figure this out. Let me test. I mean, we did probably hundreds of our friends' charts with this little piece of software just to, does this work? Oh my God, it worked again. Like, oh, you do have Mercury in Pisces. Your communication can be a little indirect or foggy. Oh, you've got Venus in Aries. You're really independent in love. That's why you keep dating this one type of person. Or, you know, it's just like, well, yeah, shit. It was just almost never, it was never wrong. And I'm not saying that like some kind of zealot. I just was like, it's like math. In a way, a little bit. It's like 2 + 2 is not going to equal 5 tomorrow. So,
you know, this is an interesting part of the conversation around astrology, because people always will ask, you believe in that stuff? And I'll say, well, it's not really belief. It's that I see, like, I see it, you know, and it's, I remember the first time I actually charged someone to do a reading. I was scared to death. It's like, I'm looking at this two-dimensional, like, diagram, and I'm supposed to just start talking to this person and make sense to them. And I just started opened my mouth and words came out. I just, you know, trust the symbols. And I said something that was meaningful and it created awareness for the other person. And again and again, again and again, I see it. And so it's hard to call it a belief. It's like, you know, I've learned to trust what I see.
A good astrologer.
Yeah, we have an aunt.
I was going to say a good astrology reading is not a sentence or a curse. It's a opening to an inquiry. It's the portal to self-discovery. So if you go to an astrologer and they give you any kind of definitive, I mean, I know that happens in some cultures where they'll map out your entire life by the stars, but my approach to it is very different. It's just like, again, you're co-creating. This is just about understanding your tendencies. We always have free will and we can choose to act with it or not, you know? So I think, you know, like people who are afraid to dive into astrology probably think it's like, you know, somebody's going to like tell you this is going to happen. I remember getting my first reading. Our aunt got us these readings. We went to visit her in San Diego. And I remember sitting with this woman at her house and I was like, oh my God, was she? But it was so amazing. Like,
it's fascinating.
She noticed something very different in our chart. Our fifth house and 11th house cusps are different. I have Taurus and Scorpio, and Ophia's Gemini and Sagittarius. And those are the romance and friendship houses. So that's really handy because as twins, we're not attracted to the same type of guys. And, you know, socially, we don't compete we have different ways of. So it's actually quite handy.
Do you guys ever get the question? I'm sure, but do you guys ever get the question about having not the same, but similar charts and how that's shown up?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I know I have a twin. We're a minute apart. It's different because, you know, she's a she, but we are so different. You know, she was, for instance, you know, she was a virgin until she was married at her Saturn return, you know? Mm. And for me, I think I had 2 or 3 kids by then.
That Virgo rising plays out differently, doesn't it?
Yes. But again, I think that speaks to what partially it speaks to what I think we all have different karma, but I think I think a chart shows thematically what we're going to face. But I think part of it is again, culture, you know, like, so, you know, little boys are with strong Mars, Aries stuff. Are taught, you know, it's okay to go run into a wall and get your knees skinned up. And
right.
You know, a lot of times, you know, things are changing, but a lot of times little girls aren't aren't supported to handle, you know, fiery planets. And so I'm curious, right, in your lives, you know, like how were your parents with your Sag energy?
Oh,
well, our father is also a Sagittarius with a Scorpio moon and an immigrant from Israel. So we're tame compared to him. Our mother's a Leo with a Libra moon and Leo rising. So that it was all fire until our Libra little sister.
They actually overwhelmed us, to be honest. We were like, do we just leave us alone? We just want to read, you know? Our mom was always let's do some activities, which is an awesome mom. Right. You know, anyone with a Leo mom, like they, but I was like, sometimes you don't want to do activities. Just want your Scorpio bubble, you know? But I mean, we did. We were very...
But our dad actually is a Sagittarius with a Scorpio moon and opposite north and south node off by 1 degree from us. So when someone has the opposite nodes, the destiny points from you, they've mastered what you came here to learn. So we worked with him. He's had a landscaping business. It was him and his truck and his Sagittarius strength and hustle. And he tried to take every boy in the neighborhood along and none of them could hang. So Tali, when we were 11, was like, I want to go cut lawns with you, Dad. I want to make some money. So
Capricorn rising.
You know, yes. She started, I joined, and he never hired anyone else again until we went to the University of Michigan. Cause he's like, hey, you could work harder than everybody. So
we were the sons they never had, basically. Yeah. Right. So funny that Capricorn North Node showed up where we just kind of were like, we're done being girly girl, Cancer South Nodes. Let's go. I mean, you know, show them that girls can do anything, you know. So I
know a lot of Sag. Sag often has to do with religion. How much did religion play a role in?
Time. Our parents,
our mother's a rabbi.
Yeah. Our grandparents were Holocaust survivors. So, you know, we had Friday night Shabbat dinner at our grandparents every week, like all the holidays, Hebrew school, all of that. I mean, for us, though, it's in the 11th house, our Sagittarius sun. So, like, I now appreciate it as part of, like, a cultural tradition. But, yeah, we weren't really – we were like, I'm spiritual, not really – you know, we're much more
– right. But my religiosity is like by like the food, you know, for the holiday.
You know, I think sometimes it's we take it for granted. I think because so you know in my community, you know, we don't have Hebrew school, but Sunday school is real. Like church is real. You know, it's, and so I think when we have this in our foundation, we have this religiosity in whatever form it takes. It forms like a matrix that I think later in life when we found astrology that religious matrix had the astrology had something to fill.
Definitely.
Oh yeah. Well, we grew up in Detroit, which is like huge black church central of the Midwest. And our mom grew up in Detroit and always loved it. She actually started a Detroit Interfaith Outreach Network. So she works with the mosques and the black churches and she's like the lone rabbi. And so she would take us to different churches and our friend that we started our magazine Hughes with was a Pentecostal preacher's daughter. So we once went and prayed in the new year with that, you know, and I was like, so we like had a lot of black church.
And they still come for our Passover seders for
Another thing about Sag,
very multicultural area. Yeah.
Another thing about Sag is multicultural, you know, and this desire and this willingness to experience other cultures. And is evident here. I mean, even you know, from the Jewish community to the African American community, or even throwing hip hop parties in the early 90s at the University of Michigan. All right, and so to kind of wrap it all up, you know, and in Sag fashion here, is just your how would you guys explain your philosophy of how you view astrology?
Well, sure. You know, astrology is a tool for human connection. And that's, I think, why we vibe with Leela so much. You know, it's like, you know, again, having this Sag dad and this Leo mom, Like they really taught us from an early age. Like we always had friends of all cultures, people of all, you know, immigrants, you know, it was just this whole, and it's like, we were really raised to just see like that there's just a diversity of humanity. Like no one fits neatly in a box. No one fit neatly in any kind of unilateral, you know, simple box when we were growing up. We didn't really fit in with American Jews or Israelis. So astrology has those nuances. Like, you know, it's like, it drives me crazy. You know, I mean, yes, there are ways that people fit certain, you know, cultural groupings. You know, we do very Jewish things sometimes, you know, I'll catch myself being like, oh my God, you know, but, you know, at the same, like that I can be the complete opposite. It's like astrology is, it's actually not, it's breaking you. It's here to break you out of a box that you may be stuck in and not even knowing. No, it's like the ultimate way out. It's the ultimate portal to like soul discovery, which I think we're all here to do. We're here to discover who we are as souls beyond this human condition. That's why our body, you know, becomes less and less and less of a thing that we can, you know, it becomes more important and less important over time. So astrology is like your soul's journey, your soul's map. That's my approach to it. Yeah. That's pretty woo, yeah. But there I go.
I pretty much agree with what she said too. It's like a permission slip to own the parts of yourself that don't fit neatly together, your quirks. You know, Hughes Magazine, our magazine, was all about identity politics and giving people a voice to talk about what their experience in the body they were given, how it shaped, you know, how they felt on the inside. And astrology was almost like the other part of the story, because I believe that your soul has absolutely nothing to do with it. And yet it probably picked exactly the body, the family, the ethnicity and everything for you to get the right, you know, set of whatever lessons you were here to learn, experiences you were here to have. You know, it's just a fascinating shortcut and permission slip to be yourself.
And it's also a tool, I will say, let me bring it back down to earth. Astrology is also great while you're Capricorn here time. In this mortal coil. Astrology is a damn awesome tool for navigating this world, the people who have showed up in your circle, to, you know, the journey of your life path, your fulfillment, your family. It's the ultimate life hack as well. And tool. Super. Yeah. So it's kind of both.
Yeah. I mean, everything you guys said, like this has been awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming on and spending some time with me.
Oh, so awesome.
Thank you for letting us be your first non-athletic and non-high guests.
Oh my God. Does this mean maybe this will rub off on us a little, because I'm like, that's the one thing I always just wished ever since being the last to cross the finish line in first grade field day. I just always wished I was a better athlete, but I'm good at, the only thing I was good at was floor hockey. I don't know, in gym. So I gave up on myself.
Michigan.
Yeah.
Well, just know that there's a good chance that a lot of people that are into sports are gonna be introduced to you guys through this podcast. And so
awesome.
So could you guys let people know where to find you? Yeah. Let people know where to find you guys.
Right. You can follow us at Astro Twins on social media. You can check out horoscopes that you might actually resonate with on our website, astrostyle.com. And you can find us wherever Ricky is soon with Leela, the app. And yeah.
We're easy to find. There's two of us.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks so much. This was so much. It was just so illuminating, like every conversation we always have. So.